Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by PASA Sustainable Agriculture. Register now for PASA's 2024 conference in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Don't miss over 70 educational sessions on farming and food systems, plus an expansive trade show. Learn more at pasafarming.org/HRN2024.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni, I'm the host here. And you know what? This is our 15th year. It's 2024, 15th season of Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be celebrating the 15th anniversary of Heritage Radio Network. And it all started here in the backyard studio at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick. So this is a fitting way to start the year. I couldn't think of a better place to be. And I'm here with one of the co-founders and owner of Roberta's Pizza himself.
I'm glad I get to be your first show of the year. Usually I'm like your last show when you're like just sick of it and you want to get rid of everybody.
Well, you know, there's something about coming here and there's nothing like having the guests that we have. So before I talk too much, let's go around and everyone introduce themselves. So I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host of Beer Sessions Radio.
I'm Brandon Hoy. I'm the owner of Roberta's.
Yep. James Tai, principal of Beer Acolyte Consulting and Gun Hill Public House in Industry City, Brooklyn.
Mike Amade, director of operations at Roberta's.
I'm Jaime Asao from Chile. I used to have restaurants and a brew pub in Chile.
Jaime, what's your real last name, though, before we go on?
Ojeda.
Jimmy coined him pre-show, like he's giving him a wrestler's name. So he's also, I don't know, nobody can see because this is radio, but he's in full spandex. And
I'm ready to go.
Yeah, he looks like the ultimate
this
warrior.
This is Jaime Asao. He's here. He's going to be making a name for himself in New York. And we're going to talk. That's what we're going to talk about this year. What's going to be hot this year in New York? And again, it's fitting to be at Roberta's because to me, this is where some things are happening from, you know, the first pizzas and everything. Let's start with how this place started and some of the first dishes that really took off.
And it is the and birthplace of pizza.
What the history is of Roberta's, why it means so much to all of us here. So.
Yeah. We started in 2008 and, you know, just some dudes trying to do something other than get wasted and, you know, wake up in some strange person's house at 6 in the morning. So the pizza thing came because we really loved, you know, like Frank Pepe's and like New Haven Pizza. And what we liked about it was the style of dining, right? It's a place that brings people together. And if you've ever been to New Haven, you know how like New Haven Pizza, it's very communal. Like everybody in town goes like 3 times a week. So so it's a place, it's not like New York style pizza, where a lot of New York style pizza is slice. It's a very transactional kind of way to eat pizza. It's like you go in, you get your slice, you go, you stand, you maybe stand around, but you're not like sitting at a table with people. So we really wanted to bring that back. There was only a handful of people that were doing it. You know, there was Grimaldi's and Patsy still was doing it, but John's. It was like really the old school Luzzo's,
John's on Bleecker,
John's, Maturo's, you know, it was just, it was still like a really, tight community of people. And we were by far the outsiders. There wasn't, you know, we were like kids and they were like the old guard, and we weren't really like trying to break into that scene, but that's what we were trying to do. We wanted a place where people in this neighborhood, there was a lot of cool, like creative people. It was a very diverse neighborhood. There was a lot of artists, musicians, fucking weirdos, like the weirdest people ever lived in this neighborhood, you know, like wearing underwear on their heads. And I don't know what kind of weird shit they're doing, but it was bonkers. And really we wanted a place where a watering hole where we could bring all these kind of weirdos together. And we felt like pizza was really the thing because, you know, it sits in the middle of the table. You all reach in for it. Everyone shares. And in the early days, everything was like very shareable communal style. And, you know, we really were trying to push the boundaries on the way people looked at pizza, what you could do on toppings. We weren't traditionalists. We weren't like following some Italian DOC. We were really just some dudes just trying to make good food at a very high quality. You know, we were growing vegetables on the roof of this building that we're sitting in, that was, and in the backyard. We were just doing DIY kind of just weird stuff. And the beer program was the same thing. You know, in 2008, there wasn't really a huge craft like bar scene happening here. So we were just trying to find local people that were doing cool stuff. Most of it was happening upstate. There wasn't a ton like there is now happening in Brooklyn. And, you know, kind of the wine program, same way, just looking for sustainable stuff that was things that we could relate to philosophically. And, you know, that was kind of the impetus. And I think you set the beat, right?
Well, you know,
and
what it
someone
is?
Someone else plays drums.
Coming into the beginning of the year, we're going to come on strong. Everyone in this room has cred in the industry. And we're going to let them establish their cred for our listeners, because then we're going to talk about how great this year is going to be for all of our businesses and the endeavors that we do. So I'm going to jump to Mike, because Mike, I first met you, were running Torse, that great first beer bar. You went out to Las Vegas. You're operations genius. And now you're here at Roberta's.
Yeah.
Just tell us what you're doing, a little overview of what Roberta's is now, so people can understand.
It keeps me from going crazy, is really.
I've always loved Roberta's, and when I was coming back to New York, it was super excited to be able to work with these guys. I first actually started coming here for this very show, actually, with you. Always appreciated the beer menu. The food was always great, and just always such a cool place to hang out. So, there's a lot of kind of cool stuff happening at Roberta's. We have our spot in Bushwick. We have a spot in Williamsburg now as well. Each of the locations has like a little bit of a different vibe. You know, the one in Domino, Williamsburg location is kind of like a grown up version of the Bushwick spot. We have Foul Witch now, which is kind of elevating food even more. Still staying on like the Italian side of things, not super traditionally, but always amazing wine. And they have a really good beer list there also.
You know, one thing, Mike and Brendan, one thing I love about Roberta's, it's always evolving in a good way, but it's also like,
it's not always in a good way. Sometimes it devolves as well. And then you have to pick it back up from the ground.
Well, that, you know, reinvention, but you've got, you know, you come for the pizza, but then it's like, I fall in love with the entrees, the meat dishes. Now I'm always getting all the vegetable dishes. And of course the pasta. How is that balance? Did you guys try to get that balance, or just like letting the kitchen do their magic, or the customers just respond?
I think a lot of it is just giving autonomy to people who are good at their jobs. And I think, you know, throughout the years, we've had some incredible chefs here who've gone on to do great things. And I think it's just giving them, empowering them to like kind of see the menu in their eyes. And some of them, their strengths are vegetables. Some of them, their strengths are proteins. And I think that you see that with the menu, it kind of ever evolves. Carlo also, you know, my partner and you know, kind of the main chef, always looking over on things. He's also like goes through these phases where he's just like, all he wants to do is protein. And then it's just like, all he wants is vegetables. So it's like, you kind of also just see the experience of like where his head is at. So, and then there's just like outside influences. Like here, you know, we're opening Blanca back up, which has been closed since COVID. We've been closed, you know, the whole time since COVID happened. And we're opening that back up with Victoria Blamey. And she's been around campus. And it's like having another chef like around for people to bounce things off of. It's just ideas start to like percolate. And I think things happen kind of naturally when there's a lot of creative people around.
The other thing is, like, for a long time, I think the sort of like the inside track here was always that back kitchen, right? Like the place is known for pizza, but like people in the know, like, know that pasta is amazing here and the bread program is amazing here, like all of the bakery stuff. And it's amazing the amount of people that work in every facet of the industry throughout New York City and everywhere else, really, that have been through these kitchens here. Like a lot of the guys that I worked with at Torst and subsequently too have been through these kitchens. And I called all of them when I was thinking about the
we're kind of slutty. Yeah. We're a very open door policy here. just come in, leave something, you know.
No, it's more communal. That's the way I would.
Thank you. That was very nice.
And you know, now we're gonna go to James, because James, since it's the beginning of the year, let's talk about this beer, because this is the first beer I'm drinking on air.
Oh yeah,
2023.
Nice.
What is it?
So this is the Wild East. It's their dark mild. You know. What's it?
Temperance.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great people. I think they're making some of the best beers in the city. You know, I think Brett Taylor, like, a lot of kudos to him. And so this is a beer that uses typically a little bit of under-modified malt, the beer style. So you're going to get, like, these cooling elements to it. You know, it might have some matcha tea, a little bit of cucumber. I think it's coming through in this particular beer as well. Very low in terms of hop drive bitterness, not a lot of hop aromatics and flavor. It's a very easy drinking, as the kids say, sessionable beer. It's actually one of my favorites, you know, both the style and this particular commercial example.
Yeah, that kudos to Roberta's. I don't know who's doing the beer list now. Is that you, Mike?
No. Yeah. I am certainly helping drive the ship, we are definitely making a focus this year in kind of rededicating ourselves to like making sure that like really good high-end craft beer is available here at all times. And we especially love, you know, all of the people in New York City that are doing a great job. And we'll bring in everybody that's doing particularly good examples of craft,
you know,
beer outside of New
York. Talking about 2024, like for me, a lot of times, I mean, I'm spoiled. I've been in the industry my whole adult life. When I go out to regular places, I call them regular places because you know what I mean. It's like I sometimes can't get a decent glass of wine. I can't get a decent glass of beer. And I don't mean it's cheap. You know what I'm saying?
That, yeah.
The mouthfeel and the production, whatever, however you want to describe that. And hopefully you guys can tell us. I think one goal today is to say, what is a good drink? What is good food? That's always
the question. I think that problem just comes from oversaturation. I think the operators have a very difficult task, because this day and age, there is so many options. When it comes to wine, beer, it's if you're not fanatical or you don't love something, it's really hard, because there's just too much out there.
Yep.
Yeah, not even that it's hard, but it's actually obvious. You know, if you see that, you see a program that's out there, and you can see like there's not a dedication, there's nothing conscientious about that program. It's very evident, you know, when you walk into a place.
Well, I just want to say again, seeing that this English Dark Mild 3.1% beer from Wild East or Friends is on tap here. It's January. It's exactly what we're going to drink. So great job. And now, Mr. Asado. Tell us your creds, because you've had restaurants, you had a brew pub.
We started a brew pub eight years ago in Chile. We sold it like three years or 4 years ago. And we got there when there was not much around, so we have to fight with educating and trying to put a product that was completely different And we got all those fights that you got in the beginning when it's something new. On the side, we had a different project that it was completely different. It was a big restaurant, and we took it over because it was closed, and it was a big patio, so we had no idea how to fill it up because it was so big. So we decided to open first all the parking lot, and we decorated as our huge garden, and we invite food trucks. And so we started like that, and then we opened the kitchen side and work it all out. But in the beer industry, I've been 20 years collaborating with different projects and trying to do different things with different people and trying to show beer and educate about beer.
And now you're in a place where you want to open up a Chilean asado upstate.
Yes. I just arrived to New York a couple months ago, and the idea, or mainly idea, is just to find a farm upstate New York, just to do events for small amount of people and just to barbecue, not just to feel the meat. It's just like the event on social. The social event asado means, because it's like a eating all day kind of thing, and like cheering and it's a social event more than just eating a piece of steak.
And we're trying to get him to do that exact thing here at Roberta's in the backyard this summer.
Well, yeah, it'll be fun. Open flames. Let's just don't burn the place down. Usually, sometimes we get a little too drunk and a fire gets awry.
happening over there? Live fire cooking is hot. So tell us who inspired you. You know, we as Americans might know one of the famous guys from Paraguay.
On beef? Talking about
Your asado friend.
I mean, Francis Momon is one of the most, known, especially in Argentina, because he's Argentinian and has restaurants all around the globe. But it's the way everybody cooks. He just put him in a different level, and I love his restaurants and everything. But we're trying to do something more like casual and more cozy asado vibe, more like friendly, not like so combined into a high class restaurant, more like casual vibe.
You would say something like a Roberta's of asado, then that's essentially
something like that. Yeah.
Well, like, how about this? If there's a grill and we're standing around, can you feed me pieces of meat as it cooks?
That's how it works.
That's what I like. That's what nobody does, Brandon.
Yeah, just feeds you meat.
Yeah.
Nobody does this.
I get that, Brandon. Yeah. Restaurant doing it. Because you've got, I've been in places where I've got a chef friend, I'm not going to say names. You know, the brisket comes out of the oven, you get the fresh slices, and it's unbelievable. And then it's something like when it gets to you in the restaurant service, it's not the same. And there's nothing like having someone on a grill with, you know, with the seasoned meat. It's probably lamb, right? Is that your preference?
Beef or lamb. I mean, pork is good too. But on my preference, I love lamb. I love beef. And when it's well cooked, you just need more than salt.
Yeah, if we could just stand around that grill and then we'd have a little counter and keep getting little drinks. And keep getting little plates of meat as it comes out.
It sounds like gout.
But it's all small portions. That's what 2024 is about. Yeah. Small portions, drink and eat all night.
Because if you did that to me, I would fall asleep there, just overloaded on beef and wine.
It is like
happy.
I'm always happy, but I would.
There's one Japanese steakhouse theme that never took off in New York. It opened, I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago in the East Village. It's the stand-up steak restaurant. Because when you're standing up, you can actually eat more. It's better for your digestion. So if there's a grill in the backyard and he's cooking it, if you can stand up, it's like a bistro. You put your elbow on the bar.
As a long time like restaurant operator and just have been in this industry my whole life, I trained myself to, I eat over a garbage can. Even at my house, I eat over the sink. Like, I never sit down to eat. I'm pretty much, you find yourself trained in this way where you just, I eat standing up so often and usually away from people, like where they right. can't see me. Cause I'm just like with my hands, like just eating the ripped ends of something, like trying to, for nobody to see me.
Did you ever come home and find a half roast chicken in the fridge? Just open it up and eat the whole chicken from the fridge.
It sounds like you have a lot of experience with this. And even if I did, I wouldn't have remembered it because there would have been a lot of other things that happened previous to me opening the fridge.
Brandon, what's fun about today is that it's everything's loose. It's the first of the year, and you always keep it going. But I know you love food, and I know you love to eat. But you are that kid that just would just eat everything, right?
I would. It's funny because a lot of people that work here actually have never seen me eat, and it's like the all elusive thing. Like, have you ever seen Brandon eat? Because I do. Like, I really truly do eat this way. I'm just like I hide, and I'm just like.
Pirate?
Yeah, totally like a pirate.
Let's talk about your places. So the New York City operations, Roberta's, you said before you were at Domino,
yeah,
which is the Williamsburg location. So when you were there, did you grab a bite of food? Did the chef give you a piece of something on the way out?
I have
out?
Not ate all day.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I haven't. But you know, like by the time I do eat, it's going to be bad.
So what were you working on? What did you do with that stock of Midori? And Midori is weird. James, have you ever made a drink with Midori?
I personally have not. No, I'm sorry.
Jaime Asao, have you made a drink with Midori?
I haven't been that lucky. No.
I think last year there was this like kind of like some of these 70s drinks were starting to come back into the zeitgeist. And they were recirculating. And to be honest with you, I think somebody just fucked up and ordered too much Midori. We're fucking sitting on a lot of Midori over there.
It's cheaper if you buy four instead of one, right?
Yeah.
Probably Mike, right?
I mean,
in my book, any Midori is too much Midori.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what happened, but definitely something crazy happened. But, you know, I was looking around. I was just trying to figure out what to do with this Midori. And, you know, we have another restaurant, Foul Witch, and we're getting our liquor license this month. And, you know, our manager, Cameron, over there, he owns a restaurant in Maine, too, called Regards. Very, very good. He's a very smart, intelligent guy. He makes great cocktails as well. He was like, just randomly, he didn't even know I was like staring at Midori. He was like, sent me the recipe for the Japanese slipper, which is a late 70s, I think early 80s cocktail, Midori, Cointreau, lemon juice, very simple. And, you know, it's like a under the radar kind of like 70s classic. And I thought, wow, this is like just weird that he sent this to me, because I'm like sitting in here looking at all this Midori being like, what the fuck do I do with this? And you know, there was a bunch of bottles of yuzu, so I just tried to make a play on the Japanese slipper, and I did Midori, Cointreau, yuzu, and then Kato, who I think we've been,
that's right, Kato, Saki out here in Bushwick.
Yeah, we did radio together, I think all of us together. The Nama, which is kind of like a fruity, like dry. It was actually perfect. I was like, we had a few cases of that. So I did.
I like the number 7, the Negori.
Oh, the number.
Just so you know. Yeah. That's all I remember.
Yeah. And we went surprised to, you remember. Well, I barely remember that
location. So dirty. Next to KCBC off of the Jefferson stop. So if you're coming out to Bushwick, you got to go to Roberta's. You gotta go to Kato Saki.
Yeah,
yeah.
Agreed.
Well, that's so sweet. that was the move. I've been trying to be over there more. You know, like Mike said, it's hard when you have multiple restaurants the same name, you know, very close together, but they're very different. I always say that like these restaurants are like children. They have the same DNA, but they grow as they get older. They separate and they're very different. You know, they're two very different restaurants with the same name. You know, they just happen to have Carlo and I's DNA in them somehow. And it wasn't nasty. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Go around.
Kind of sounds gross. Yeah.
So at the Domino location in Williamsburg, would you have the same salad? Would you have the same pizzas? Would you have the same specials?
You know, we have items that are always going to be the same. There's like, you know, we're going to have very similar salumi and things. We're going to have, you know, the meat and cheese charcuterie, like in the charcuterie section, a lot of that same stuff. We usually always have the little gem salad and, you know, the four kind of basic pizzas. But outside of that, it's a completely different menu than we have here.
Those are based on the chefs that are working in those restaurants. They're bringing all of their experience to bear on that property, which kind of that's what makes that property unique. Yeah.
And Mike, is this the first time you've managed more than one location?
Yes.
Because I always feel like that must be a huge learning curve.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Roberta's itself has been a huge learning curve. There's so much going on, even on this property alone, because there's the takeout spot and the bakery. In the summertime, the backyard is just activated all the time with concerts and weddings and, you know.
And Jimmy.
And Jimmy, yes, exactly.
Asado.
Jaime Asado. Yeah. Coming this summer.
And then there's the restaurant itself, and then there's the tiki bar, which also gets activated. Like in December, we did an entirely new pop-up restaurant and bar with its own food and drinks. So there's a lot just on
this
campus
alone.
So
where does the food come out for that?
Out of the teeny little, like, 9-square-foot kitchen in the back of Roberta's.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it true that when you first started, you guys, the first, because I know you put in a new pizza oven, the first pizza oven, did you build around it? Is that how it first started?
No, well, the first pizza oven came from a small town in Italy, in northern Italy, called Fusano. And it's a Pavazzi, same. Oven that's here today. It was the first one actually in America. We shipped it. We bought it from some sketchy Italians. We shipped it DHL and they lost it. Lost in air quotes because they were just holding it ransom until we gave them more money. They extorted us. But when we got it in, the front was kind of like fully open because this was like construction place. So once we put it in, it was kind of stuck here. We brought it in with a forklift through the back, actually through those double doors right there with a forklift, and then brought it in and dropped it, and then we built the place around it, and then it was like we couldn't get it out. So we had
a couple years ago, didn't you put a new one in?
Yeah, we knocked the wall down.
Oh yeah. Literally, you took the wall down, took the old one out and brought the new one in.
Yeah, and then rebuilt the wall.
Yeah. And I was pissed because you were closed for, was it one day?
One day.
One day.
One day.
Wow. Where was the second one from? The same Italians?
No. We actually bought it from Pavazzi, the manufacturer, which if we would have known, I would have done it the first time. I didn't need to buy it used.
Well, you learn a lot. You know, there's something about you got a lot to teach people about opening places. And it's still amazing that you're here now. This is what, your 16th year or 15th year?
Yeah, 16.
Yeah, 2008.
Our sweet 16.
Congrats.
We're going to have a party back here. It's going to be like, you know, somebody's bat mitzvah in the back, you know?
Well, James, I just want to appreciate you, man, because, you know, I've known you for so long. Your creds are high. You're advanced cicerone. You're many things. When I look at your Instagram, I can't even figure out all those initials that signify your accreditations.
Come on.
What are they? You're like, is it MSET or WSET?
So there's WSET certification. I'm actually working on, maybe it's a little bit too early to talk about, but being an online tutor for their upcoming like beer certifications as well. Cicerone certifications, you know, BJCP certifications, a lot of sensory training.
So you're kind of the professor of...
this industry.
He's like a doctor.
You're becoming the professor. Beer.
No, I'm just kind of, I don't know what I call myself. You know, I'm just a continual student of the industry. That's what I would say.
Yeah. You have the right attitude all the time. And Gun Hill Public, man.
Yep.
Last year we had a rye event with rye whiskey, rye grains, Cassoulet.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it was great to get introduced to Industry City.
Yep.
How's it going? You've got some cool stuff going on there. But what's it like running a brew pub in a big place like Industry City?
I mean, it comes with a lot of advantages, but, you know, at the same time, certain challenges as well. It's great. I think it's an awesome complex. I think the operators are fantastic. I think a lot of the tenants there are great. It provides just a plethora of different distractions for anybody, you know, any group at any given time. And so, you know, we see a lot of different people, you know, that walk through the doors. And you know, we appreciate everybody that comes through, and we have great conversations and obviously great drinks as well.
What's your drink for 2024? We start off with the Wild East, the English Dark Mild.
Right. I would say whatever's in front of me. I think that's my drink. You know, I think everybody at the table would agree with that. So, yeah. Yeah. I think you never want to be that one person. I learned this early on, and I don't want to get like, you know, too kind of dark or like too negative, but you never want to be that person that just kind of refuses a drink, that it just, you know, it takes away from the vibe. You know, I don't know what you're trying to prove at that point. You know, if someone's offering you something, you know, please accept it, you know, with, you know, full, like, you know, full heart and just really appreciate that moment.
I just actually had this conversation with Jimmy's wife. When somebody tells you they're not drinking, it's just their way of convincing themselves that they're really not drinking. Because if you're really not drinking, you don't have to tell anyone. You're just like, no, I'm good. Like, but you don't like come out and say, hey guys, I'm not drinking.
Right.
Because if you're saying that, you're just saying it to yourself. Like, really, I'm not drinking.
Definitely. Who are you convincing?
It's not anybody else, because most people don't believe you. They're like, yeah, sure. Right.
Thank you, because that's where I wanted this show to go. This is the January show, and we are talking about drinking. So,
of course.
Mike, for you, you brought – I asked you guys to bring something that you're drinking this year. You brought something.
Yeah, my drink of the year, one of them anyway, is going to be Genepi. And this is a great example of it. This is from January Spirits. These guys are right here in Bushwick, right around the corner. From John and Lucky, two guys I worked with at Torst, as it happens, but the spirit is actually amazing. So it's a Alpine herbal liqueur. It's like a digestive. When you get down to the bottom of it, it's 50% alcohol, so it also packs a punch. But it's herbal. It's sweet, but not overly sweet, and it's just delicious. Yeah, it's like a walk in the forest.
All right, well,
so I'm gonna pour a little right now.
Right, stop talking, more pouring.
Yeah.
And then Mike, while you pour,
I think I'm just gonna go out on a limb and say that I think a future trend, if it's not this year but soon, I think these more kind of geographically like centralized liquors like Genepi, which is a northern Italian. It's usually in the Alps, right? So they're foraging for alpinists, like berries, juniper, right? And I think things like this, I'm going to Montenegro next week to look for Rakia.
Salut.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with it's a Balkan. Cheers to everyone.
Cheers.
It's a Balkan liqueur, usually made with grape, plum, or apricot. So, but I think a trend is going to start going towards these kind of like single origin liquors. You really saw these big jumps, right? Like in the early 2000s, like Amaro really kind of took this real big leap, right? People coming back to these kind of more medicinal kind of digestif and bitters and all that stuff kind of made a comeback. Mm-hmm. Even something like mezcal, right? Which is such a very specific to Oaxaca, like such a very
terroir driven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like from a place that it's like that took like such a big jump. And I think there's a lot of these really interesting things, whether it's grappa or Genepi or Arakia, like
agricole. agricole rum. Yeah.
You know, Calvados. Like, there's these things that are just very, you know, very specific to regions that I don't think get a lot of play in America. And I think that that's, you're going to start seeing that trend happening more, not just in like cocktail making, which I think is the easy way into it, but just people enjoying it, like you know,
That for me personally, I like the high quality pure spirit or Amaro just the way it is.
Yeah.
And I feel like too often the cocktail just dilutes it.
Yeah.
And I don't need this diluted. This is amazing.
I'll tell you what, though.
I have a cold. And now I feel better.
Yeah, that's it. This is exactly what you need.
The thing is like you need the cocktail from a certain standpoint to really introduce people to it. So people don't really start to like look at it as a thing to drink like this. They see it in cocktail lists and they like Sital or something like that. And it's like, if you see it over and over again, then when you see it on the shelf, you're like, you know what? What is that thing? Like, it sometimes takes a long time for people to really digest it.
Right, yeah.
And when it's in a cocktail, you kind of start seeing it over and over again. And then I think it starts to pique more people's interest. Now, there's fanatics and weirdos like us who search out adventurous drinking, you know. But for most people, their introduction to some of these kind of offshoot things is really coming through a cocktail list. Even sake like wasn't incredibly popular until the Sakatini and until like Americanized kind of version, at least in America, right? Until the Americanized kind of version of like they were putting it in cocktails, they were doing interesting things with it. And I think like there's all of these steps. Mezcal, best by itself. I don't need a cocktail. Yeah. I just want to drink mezcal with some fruit.
You know? So how do people get into mezcal though? Like, you know, given that, I mean, I love mezcal, you know, and again, I'm one of the weirdos that you speak of, but you know, like in terms of like how it gained traction, you know, like, can you speak of that?
I think it became a substitute for tequila. So a lot of the just kind of, you know, a regular person, their introduction to it was it being substituted in some sort of margarita. And presented as the smoky version, the bourbon, the bourbon of tequila, you know, like, and I think for most people, their introduction to mezcal was through a cocktail versus, you know, just drinking it straight. Like, it, you know, anyone that drinks mezcal kind of regularly would just be like, I don't need the cocktail. I just drink it. Yep. I just want it. You know, it's like bourbon, a very good bourbon. I'm not trying to make a cocktail out of it either. There are things that you want to appreciate, the like craft that it took to actually make that thing. You know, like this Genepi is fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
And usually for Genepi, it's incredibly viscous and sweet. And it's almost like, if you go to Italy, it's like really, really hard to drink. Like, even some of the best that I've had, it's very like thick.
Yeah, and, right.
It's like a medicated simple syrup.
Mike,
you know?
Do you guys sell this here, the Genepi?
We do, yeah.
Yep. So I can get a glass of it afterwards.
Absolutely, yeah. We started with it at Grinchy's, our holiday pop-up. We were, our pastry chef, Emily, was making marshmallows with it. And then we were using that in a hot chocolate that had chartreuse in it. And then marshmallows made with Genepi. We also have it available for drinking straight.
Another theme of today, which Brandon wants to learn more about, the international drinks judging, which I know James does, and Jaime Asao.
I only want to know because, like, I want a job. Like, I want to do this.
Well, first, just James, it's a tough job. James, the spirit we just drank, and Mike, you're up there too in that league. Break it down for us. I mean, there's a lot of complex flavors here. There's bitterness. I like it. I think I just chewed on a black peppercorn too.
Yeah. Mike, you want to talk first?
Yeah. So Genepi is it's made with alpine herbs with the same genus of like wormwood. So from absinthe. So it's a lot of those very bitter herbs that come from high altitudes and then steeped in some sort of high octane alcohol, basically. Could either be vodka or pure spirit.
Spiritus.
And then
often.
And sugar.
Yes.
Yeah, and sugar. But yeah, that's what's cool about this one in particular, because you do have the body, which is important. You want the body to be to hold up, but it's not, doesn't feel overly sweet either. Everything's kind of in balance, and you get the flavors, and the bitterness comes through, but it's also sweet, but not overly, and just everything's perfectly balanced.
Yeah, you get kind of like some of the like Underberg like grip knit, like the peppercorn was good that you picked that, because it's like it's not just spicy in an alcohol way, it's like almost spicy in the mouth, like in the front of the mouth versus like down when you know alcohol where it's just like hitting your chest. But yeah, this is amazing. It's
you know, this guy Jaime Asao, when he's here this summer, not only can he grill lamb and pork on your little grill and you can have pieces of the taste, he's going to pour you little shots of Genevieve.
Yeah.
Nice. Or Pisco.
Good too.
Wow. Hey, we're going to just take a short break and be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Want to cultivate farms and food systems that nourish, heal, and empower? Register now for PASA's 2024 Sustainable Agriculture Conference. Discover resources, services, and products at our expansive trade show, and explore more than 70 educational sessions on climate smart practices, food justice, soil health, and more. Featuring a dynamic lineup of speakers, including Reginaldo Hasle Marroquin, farmer and founder of the Regenerative Agriculture Alliance and CEO of Tree Range Farms, and Reverend Dr. Heber M. Brown III, pastor, community organizer, and founder of the Black Church Food Security Network. Find your community at PASA's 33rd annual conference in Lancaster, Pennsylvania on February 8th through 10th. Register now at pasafarming.org/HRN2024. That's PASAfarming.org/HRN2024.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Wow, this is our first show of 2024. We're back in the mothership, Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It's also our 15th season coming up and celebrating 15 years of Heritage Radio Network and 16 years of Roberta's Pizza. So let's make a toast. Our friend Mike Amity here, operations director. Hey. Roberta's brought out the Genepee. Mike, tell us again, Mike. What is this? And is this made in Bushwick? Because this is what's amazing. There, last year at this time, there was a guy making an Amaro somewhere in New York who had you guys have on your list or had on your list. St. Agrestis. We've got Kato Saki. A lot of people are making different drinks.
Yeah,
in New York.
Four Dave is also making, bitter Amaros and some other cool things right here in Bushwick. Also, there's a lot of cool stuff happening in New York.
Yeah, but who are these guys?
January Spirits. So they do right now. They really just started. I think they're about a year or so in. They do a Genepee. They do an Amaro, like a coffee Amaro, basically. And they also have a gin. Those are the three things that they're selling right now. They were self-distributing, but they're with one of the large warehouses now. So like bars and restaurants in New York can get them delivered. And they don't have. I think they're basically doing their own sales, but it's just two guys, and they're making really great stuff.
And then you have four bottles of Midori at Domino. How many bottles of this do you have here?
I think I have 12, but...
but who's counting?
How many bottles of this do you have at the time?
In Bushwick, we have a couple cases of this. Yeah. We're going to get it to Domino as well.
You think that there's some like kind of crossover because they're making gin that they were making gin. Were they making gin first?
And nope. I think they started with Genepee actually.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cause it makes sense to then make gin or Genepee, right? Cause a lot of the same like herbaceous roots and like all of that stuff can go into gin. So
I'm wondering
if the collection of herbs that they're using for the Genepee is similar in their gin.
There's
this would be like minus the sugar, right? Like this would be a very delicious gin. It would be on the, you know, like more herbal side versus kind of some of the like more fruitier ones that are out now.
Yeah,
definitely
the cucumber or the floral ones, right? Yeah, Yeah. No, their gin is also very good. I haven't thought about it that way, but it does make sense.
Well, let's go down that rabbit hole. Maybe this is the year of some of these traditional spirits. And I in 2009, I was in Amsterdam for 10 days, and I was staging at a bar that the owner also had a small distillery. And he was making traditional eau de vies and Genevers.
Yeah, I love
them. The same kind of thing. You'd just have a little glass of it. You'd have a beer. You'd have a glass of that. And that's what I have my Wild East, you know, dark English mild, 3%. Mm-hmm. And I'm having this Genevieve. How deep can we go with things like that? It's like Geneva, Genevieve.
Aquavie.
Yeah, how deep can we go?
Panama has
You know, my first restaurant in the 90s, Brandon, I got a liquor license, and all I got were top shelf grappas that I would only give to my best customers.
Yeah.
I didn't want any other liquors except for that. And that's the only reason I got the license. So how do we get to that? Like, how can we get to that quality and showcasing it? You understand you have to run a business, but.
Yeah. It's a hard line to walk because, like, really the majority of the general public, you know, quote unquote, is not looking for this stuff, or they don't know that they are looking for it. At least there's a certain percentage that, like, if you have pick up a conversation with them, they'll become interested and you can talk to them and get them interested in this. But a lot of people will have zero interest in this type of thing. You know, they're going to drink their Bud Light or that thing that they always drink, and that's all they care to drink. And that's okay too. You know, and you have to, you know, as restaurant operators, we have to sort of, walk that line between the two. We have to have some availability for the people that just, you know, they want what they want, and you have to honor that. But you also have to have these more curated things that get everybody else excited.
So, Mike, what do you have this year for 24? You know, like, my daughter turned 21. She's been going out for 6 months, and, you know, her other friends are 21 to 25. They're young kids, they go out 3 or 4 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the intro drinks for them? You guys would have here.
Oh, for me, a great intro drink that I want to see more of in 2024 are daiquiris. A well-made classic daiquiri with an interesting rum is like one of my favorite cocktails wherever I am. Because the rum can be so many different things, like these agricole rums. From different parts of the world, using different sugar canes, all taste different based on where they were grown. Some of the ones in Haiti, they call them Clarin there. They're grown there. They press the juice. They're wild fermented, and then sold. High octane, but so much character. And if you make a daiquiri with those spirits, it's
rum amazing. Is one of the most interesting liquors, though, because it's so widely different. Like, it's just one, because it geographically it covers such a large space. Yeah. I mean, like, people make it all over, but they're so different.
Yep.
You know, there's just such a wide range of rum flavors.
Yeah.
It's crazy on its own. So it is really one of the most unique when it comes to this, because it's just like there's a lot of rum flavors that American palates haven't adapted to, you know?
No, they just think rum is a dark,
Bacardi.
Sweet.
or like Myers. Or
right,
like,
yeah. It's the only one of those two.
Or Malibu. And then you're like, what?
Yeah,
you know.
Fair.
I think that's a really interesting approach, Mike, that you brought up, because, you know, you're introducing people to something that's really familiar, you know, but you're actually expanding the breadth of knowledge as to, you know, what it is that they're tasting with that base spirit, you know. And I was thinking about things, you know, like, you know, we've all been talking about a lot of different things, you know, and I want to go, you know, back east, you know, thinking about like things that are, you know, like soju, and I've had like incredible soju.
You mean east of like Asia?
Yeah, well, definitely east of
New York,
of the Hudson River, definitely. Yeah, and so, you know, you think about soju, and there's been some fantastic sojus that I've had. I've had the privilege of having something called makgeolli, you know, which is starting to kind of percolate. Correct. Yeah. So, it's. I mean, the analogy would be something like a nigori sake, but like, you know, like the Korean version of it. And I don't want to kind of reduce it to that. You know, Wulangyi, which is something that's really, it's got a lot of different flavor profiles, baijiu. You know, there's things that are out there that you can introduce them, you know, with much more accessible flavors. You know, but then you can expand upon that, you know, once you lock them into like a certain kind of cocktail or the likes.
You know what? This is starting with Genepi going to this, and Jaime's here. How do that? There's so many cultures and so many people from different countries, especially in New York. It sounds like you're onto something. How do we take those flavors? I mean, they get incorporated into your menus, into your cocktails, but how can you push them ahead? You know, you're coming here with some ideas. What do you see that's different here in New York than what you were doing in Chile?
I think everything is cultural. If you don't present it in a way that should or is socially approachable, it's hard to people to get it. It's like what I was saying about the barbecue things is that. It's a cultural thing we do for everything we do, or any reunion. We're always ready for lighting up the charcoal or the wood, whatever. It's always a fire next to it. So it's part of it. And we're always cooking it, and it's gathering people. This is a cultural thing. It's not just a cooking. It's the experience of being or reunion or gathering. So I think if you don't have that, it's hard to spread the word, yeah. Whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, in places like this where the philosophy is community and it's like bringing people together, it's easier to spread these type of ideas. But restaurants aren't all like this. You know, there's a lot of white tablecloth of segregation. You don't care. You don't really want to hear what the people next to you are. Like, sometimes it's nice to just be all smashed in together and, like, have to hear what the person next to you says.
Oh, what's that person drinking right there? And, like, you know, what are they saying about?
Yeah. That's not being weird about pointing and being like, no. I want that.
Right.
And, like, the other person being like, yeah, that this is good. You should have this. And I think more of that has to happen. And I think, hey, you know, not to go down the rabbit hole of, like, I'm getting old and shit's changed, but we've lost touch with the communal self, like us being connected to each other. And I think it's really easy in this world with so many distractions that we forget that there's people in front of us that we could connect with. And these drinks, like, for hundreds of years are here to connect us. They're not here for any other reason. People made these things so that people could all sit down at a table and have them together, and they could find a place where they could communicate. Yeah. And they're really conduits to communication. Like, you drink, it lubricates you, it gets you loose. Like, all of these things, they're here so that people can talk to each other, and they can argue, they can cry, they could laugh, but what they're doing is they're talking, you know, and they're having discourse, and they're like having communication. And I think getting back to some of these, like, kind of more, I don't want to call them primitive, because it's like really like not really what they are, but they're simple, right? They're well crafted, simple vessels to get to bring people together, you know, like pizza.
Yeah, right. I'll tell you, if like there's a table that had this Genepi there, I would be right there, like, hanging out with them. So
it's funny, and I see this a lot too here at Roberta's, because we have a couple of communal tables, which you don't see everywhere, but you see this happening all the time with people if they're shoulder to shoulder sitting next to somebody they don't know, but the alcohol that they're drinking or the food that they're eating will spark a conversation, and next thing you know, they're strangers are talking, which doesn't happen very often in the U.S. anymore.
Well, you guys are pretty cool. Before I ask,
no,
you guys,
you're cool.
Well, yeah, the embarrassing questions. No, I don't ever do that. But the quote when literally yesterday I said, you know what, we got to do a show to kick off the year in the studio at Roberta's, and you are the guys that made it happen, because this is a special place, and you guys, this means a lot to me. But James said, you know what? Just thought of this. Cool to invite Jaime Ojeda, Mr. Osada,
for today's show. Also part of the international judging circuit. And when I heard that, Brandon lit up when I told him about that. What the hell is this?
I just want to tag James, along. You're can in I like, just like, can I just be tell his assistant?
Us, yeah, like, just, a, James, I'm, where have you been judging beers and other drinks yes. in the last 2 years?
I mean,
3 months.
Whatever. Lyon, Frankfurt, Seoul, Florianopolis, Denver, Colorado, whatever, Bridgeport, Connecticut. And a couple coming up in Liverpool, you know, hopefully Melbourne and Cape Town. So,
so what are you on, an email list or what?
Yes, it's just a list that goes out, you know, to certain people. Yeah.
And then, Jaime, and you, where have you been judging the last couple of years?
The couple of years, Europe, Belgium, Brazil, Argentina, Chile.
So what's in Brazil? Is there United a States. Special judging or there's multiple?
Brazil?
Yeah.
Brazil is kind of unique because it's a big country. Today has the third largest competition in the world. It's happening in Blumenau, March. And is the two biggest one, U.S. has them, is the World Beer Cup and the Great American Beer Festival. And the third competition, they have it. And the singularity is only Brazilian beers. So basically it's like the second one for only one country. It's like the Great American Beer Festival and Blumenau.
And how many entries are going to Blumenau?
Over 4,000.
So your taste 4,000 beers?
No.
Because I just got real jealous.
No. Usually I would say in an average per competition should be 40, 50 per day.
There's that's a good, that's a good amount.
There's a good ones you do only 50 in the mornings, and then they take you around and show you around whatever is happening in the industry. So it all depends.
When did you open your brew pub?
Oh, I don't even remember.
Because he's dreaming of a song.
With the corona, I kind of lose track sometimes because all this was pre-corona, so the corona messed up the timeline. But I'd say like eight years ago.
Wow. And then, James, for you, just like a snapshot, these international beer competitions, suddenly they're happening in South America too.
Yeah, and it's a really, really interesting kind of scene, an interesting sensibility that you're seeing down there. A lot of styles are starting to come out of there. The Santa Catarina Sour, you know, that's a recognized style. It's from Brazil. And the thing that I'm seeing a lot of is the additions in the beers. You know, there are all these different like fruits and woods that I'm just barely kind of like, you know, like learning, and I'm loving it. Amburano. Thank you. Yeah. That thing is it's an incredible kind of addition to a beer. And so that's kind of the value of going to different places and kind of seeing what the sensibilities look like, you know, from region to region. From country to country, you know, to be honest with you. And I think there's a lot of value there because you're able to kind of be inspired by things and you can bring them back. And if not even bringing them back, you actually have knowledge of what this is and what's possible in the realm of beer.
Yeah. And Brandon, for 2024, live fire, you've got wood. Tell us how the pizza ovens work in your restaurant.
Oh, they're hot. Hot as fuck.
But is there wood in there too?
There's wood. There's only wood.
There's wood.
Yeah, there's wood.
So there's wood fire.
Wood fire.
And what about grilling? If you've got this guy wants to do wood fired,
it's the problem in New York for us is it comes down to venting, right? You have to have like a dedicated vent line for wood, which is a solid scrubber versus and then you have to scrub it because of carbons. So we really just have that one wood fire. We have another one. I mean, there's five ovens, like pizza ovens on this compound. Not including the ones on wheels that you probably see around the whole neighborhood. But, and then we have some small like Japanese grills. We have a smoker in the back. I mean, we try to use as much wood as we possibly can for as much as we can. We have a spit roast. If you walk around over here, you can see there's like a spit roast. You know, as much as we can get out there and use solid fuel, we do.
Lovely. Last thing to give you a plug, because we love you, man. Without you, there would not be Heritage Radio Network. And thanks for everything you've done for 15 years.
I don't think that's true, but...
Well, it'd be somewhere else, you know. But definitely, you know how many guests that wanted to come here just so they could hang out at Roberta's, get a pizza, get your hospitality. At the time, I had been going on Martha Stewart Radio. And you go to Midtown, you have to wait in the waiting area. You get on the show for 20 minutes, then you're out.
Yeah, that's what radio. But you might see Martha Stewart, so you're like,
"Oh no, hey, you didn't see Martha Stewart."
Either, you so might,
you didn't.
But you might.
But last thing, okay, Roberta's here. We're going over time, but it's the first show of the year, catered by Roberta's. So I looked online and I saw this thing, catered by Roberta's.
Yeah, we do it. I mean, it's a big business for us. I mean, like Mike said, in this backyard. I mean, we have 10 weddings a year in the backyard here. And, you know, we had a location in Montauk. We had a bunch of stuff happening there. We cater offsite. We cater in this backyard. It's a good business. We've had it almost as long as we've had Roberta's, probably for 14 years. We've been doing catering out of here. And it is like part of like what keeps this alive. You know, we have all these mobile pizza ovens. We go out, we do a lot of, you know, just pizza cooking, but for the most part, our catering team is doing, you know, like Mike said, we call it back kitchen, right? Cause we have two kitchens here. We have a pizza kitchen and we have a back kitchen. In the back kitchen, they're doing fresh pastas, proteins, vegetables. And for the most part, our catering division mostly does that stuff. Like a lot of times they'll like come out and they'll want some pizzas, but for the most part they're gonna want like, you know, large format. Either we're doing a whole pig or a goat, or we're doing, you know, large format pasta and salad. So for the most part, like there's probably more of that other food that we get out of the catered by Roberta stuff.
All right. Well, once again, man, this is the hot spot of Bushwick. Matt Timms. Guy started so many of the cook-offs in New York that influenced a lot of the events that
I do. His beard looks good.
Yeah, man, the guy hasn't changed. So, you guys, listen, thank you. One more time. Brandon, James, Mike, and Mr. Jaime Asao. From Chile. This, this is a cool freaking show. We kicked it off the year thanks to Armin Spengen, our engineer. Once again, start of our 15th season on Beer Sessions Radio. And hey, thanks so much, Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Thanks so much, guys. Woo! Thank you.
Thank you.
Pour some on the agenda, please.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.